I would like to convene this meeting of the Lincoln County Board of Commissioners. Good morning. It is Wednesday, January 11th, 2017. All three commissioners are present, constituting a quorum. Our first order of business is an order appointing the chair and vice chair of the Lincoln County Board of Commissioners. So my last act as 2016 chair will be to call for nominations for chair for 2017.
I'll nominate Commissioner Terry Thompson as chair.
I'll second that nomination. Hearing no other nominations, I'll declare nominations closed and call for a vote on the election of Terry Thompson as chair of the Lincoln County Board of Commissioners. All in favor, please say aye.
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 And just a note for the record, because this is the board has for years and years rotated the chair every year in a logical fashion here, and this is a continuation of that particular practice of rotating the chair.
You're trying to decrease my...
No. Can I also... All right. Then once you do the vice chair, assuming that you, again, follow the tradition and an appointment in the rotation schedule here, there is an order that actually memorializes your decisions made by these motions. So go ahead for the next discussion.
So I call for nomination of vice chair.
Mm-hmm. I nominate Commissioner Doug Hunt.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Well,
now a motion to adopt the order, which actually memorializes that decision.
Mr. Chair, I would move to adopt the order appointing Terry Thompson as chair of the Board of Commissioners and Doug Hunt as vice chair of the Board of Commissioners for 2017.
I'll second it.
All in favor say aye.
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 Motion passes. Okay, now we jump down to consent calendar. Consent calendar items are things of routine nature, things that we've previously heard. Is there anything you'd like to highlight, delete, or change?
I'll move for approval of the consent calendar.
I'll second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion passes. We go to public hearings. Public hearings, we start with the dissolution, dissolving of the Lala Acres Subdevelopment Sanitary District. Gary?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Chair, which we need to open the hearing first.
Oh, excuse me. Now move over.
Move over there.
Okay, I'll open the hearing. Jerry Herbage, you'll represent the staff, so now you can start.
Thank you. What you have before you is a proposal to dissolve the Lava Acres Subdivision Sanitary District. This is in accordance with the Oregon Revised Statutes section on inactive districts, which begins at ORS 198-335, dissolution of inactive districts. We have published notice three times in accordance with the law, and this is the time for the public to appear and comment on the dissolution itself and whether or not they have any claims. This district was formed in 1978 and really hasn't been active since about 1978 as far as we can tell. But I think you should go ahead and see if there's any public comment. I have a draft order that we can look at depending upon what happens here to move this along.
Is there any public comment to address this issue? Is there any public comment to address this issue? Seeing none, go forward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I have an order in front of you. It would result in the dissolution of this sanitary district, which by all indications has not been active since 1978. This would be part of a process that the board has been going through. This will be the fourth, I think, district that you will have taken care of. So the board's done a good job of taking care of that, and I would ask the board to consider making a motion to approve the order dissolving the Olala Acres Subdivision Sanitary District.
Yeah, take a motion.
Well, I have a question first.
Okay, excuse me. Yes.
There are no active board of directors or any records of this sanitary district that I guess, have been established since, what, 1978? Still, there's nothing.
Well, that's correct. What's funny is we've been in contact with the clerk, and the clerk can't find any records that there was ever any election in the first place. so this was set up for repair and maintenance of the sanitary district, but it appears that it never really got going.
There's just no records of anything, really.
Yeah, which is another interesting point, because whenever you dissolve a district, the records are supposed to be turned over to the clerk, but I don't think we're going to find anything.
All right. I'll move for approval of the order dissolving the Alala Acres Subdevelopment Sanitary District.
I'll second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Motion passes. Move down to item B.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jerry.
Jurisdictional transfer of Big Creek Road, County 402, to the City of Newport.
Commissioner, if you'd open the hearing, please.
Okay. We'll open the hearing.
And I'll note for the record that this is the hearing required under Oregon revised statutes for the transfer of a county road from our jurisdiction to the City of Newport. This is actually something that's been going on for some period of time. There's been a number of actions that have taken place in anticipation of this particular transfer. Started out with an arrangement that the city and Lincoln County entered into that talked about the potential transfer and some maintenance responsibilities for Big Creek County Road. And it was really precipitated by the fact that the city amended their urban growth boundary and annexed all the property that's adjacent to both sides of the road that we're discussing here. So this is all within the city limits. City owns a significant portion of the property adjacent to the road as part of the Big Creek Reservoir watershed for the city water system. But they are not the exclusive property owners out there. There are other properties that access the road along that area there. But they would like to have some control of the road as they look at future plans for either improving or redeveloping the reservoir system along there. In fact, I just understand they were doing some work this week sort of related to that particular project, doing some core sampling for some of their long-range plans out there. So the necessary pre-transfer activities have taken place, including on our part, we legalized the road. We went to, did a survey of the road, identified specifically where it was in order to move forward with the transfer, and completed that legalization some time ago. The one big change in this particular arrangement from what was originally discussed was there was a possibility that the city wanted us to make some additional improvements to the road and then enter into a maintenance agreement to actually maintain the road on behalf of the city. They would pay us to do that for a short period of time. As we came to the conclusion, though, of all these other pre-legalization or pre-transfer processes, the city staff and city council came to us and said, we do not want the county to undertake any of these maintenance improvements or to maintain the road. They'll take full responsibility. So that's what's being proposed at this point. So this is the hearing. We've done the appropriate notices as required by law. This is the opportunity to receive public comment, and then we can discuss what might be the next steps.
Okay. Is there any public comment on this topic? Please come forward. Identify yourself. When you get a chance, put your name down on the material over there.
Okay. Norm Ferber, 5726 Northeast Big Creek Road. I'm one of the two residents who live at the end of Big Creek Road. And basically, Wayne has probably covered most of my questions. My first, and it's probably just procedural, but I've been attending meetings since the Planning Commission meetings on the city level, and I usually receive some kind of notification, whether it's a letter in the mail or something else. Is that not a requirement?
No, it's not. That's interesting. The actual transfer process, these other processes required some notification for doing that, but the transfer process actually requires simply publication in a newspaper for four consecutive weeks or posting on the, and I think we did both in this particular case. You post at the road, you post a notice for folks that travel the road to do it. So,
so there was a notice on the road. And where would that have appeared?
Maybe I can have Mr. Kenyon come forward because he's the one I think who posted the notice. So,
okay. Yeah,
let him.
Yeah, the notice was Roy Kenyon, Lincoln County Public Works Director. I actually made a notice posted right there. It'd be just east of the city park as you approach the first reservoir.
Okay.
It was over there on the right hand side on a tarpon.
Okay.
Keep my eye out in the future for those.
Yeah, because when I posted for the organization, it required three postings on the road. And I posted at three different places along the roadway, same size of posting. In this case, it was to be posted in three public areas, and so it was posted at City Hall, it was posted here at the courthouse, and it was actually then posted up there right at the beginning of the road.
Okay. All right. Okay, well, I guess as a citizen of the United States, it's my responsibility to be notified, even though it's, you know, there's only two residents out there at this point, and they would, you know, I have an email address, I have multiple email addresses. So, as I understand from your explanation, Wayne, that the city is going to take over maintenance of
yes.
the road, and when is that going? When is that not actually going to happen?
Well, if the board proceeds with the transfer, what we do is the procedure is that we actually make the offer to the city. So we adopt an order that offers to transfer the road to the city. They then have to adopt what they call appropriate municipal legislation, which is usually a resolution, an ordinance, something of that nature, in which they say they accept the transfer. Once they adopt that municipal legislation, then the transfer becomes immediate. So it could be, and what we normally do is we put a time frame in these things because we don't want it to hang out there forever. I mean, if they either accept it or they don't accept it. And so we would put normally 60 days or 90 days to give them ample time to get this in front of the city council and make a decision.
Now, during the course of public testimony, the city had entered into an agreement for, initially at least, for maintenance and security and whatnot with the county, and that was part of those were part of the meetings that I did attend. I did attend the public, you know, the Planning Commission meeting on the county level here, as well as the commissioner meeting. And at what point in time is the city allowed to enter in, you know, or dissolve that agreement that's part of the public record and enter into another agreement that isn't part of the public record?
Yeah. Well, the normal procedure on these things is that we would not take any maintenance responsibility. That's the transfer is what really, you know, takes away our responsibility, liability, and maintenance responsibilities. Mm-hmm. So that's the normal procedure. This agreement was they had approached us on the transfer and said, you know, we would like to have look at the county having maintenance responsibility. When we proceeded, when we got done with all the annexations, all the urban growth boundary amendments, then the legalization, and so it's the next steps, and they said, all right, let's start the steps to actually accomplish the formal transfer. At that point, they came back and said, we want to release you from those obligations. We're now going to take maintenance responsibility. So that was really something that they had wanted to do, was to maintain the road and pay us to do that. They're now saying that they'll take care of that responsibility.
And so up until this point, you know, my property, I'm not sure about Cedars, but my property just lies outside of the city boundary. And up until this time, the county and the county sheriff's department theoretically was the agency that responded, you know, to my call. I've lived out there for 14 years. And who will, you know, occasionally I see a state trooper on, you know, and certainly there's fish and game that mm-hmm. comes. You know, occasionally I see a city patrol car, but I have absolutely no idea what their jurisdiction or responsibility, or do they just simply want to take a ride out there?
No, their responsibility actually will, the city police department will respond to any kinds of issues along the road. And remember what they've done now is that's now city property. They've annexed everything on both sides of the road all the way out there to where we're proposing to transfer. So that would be a city responsibility.
And as regards fire,
I assume, and I may be wrong with this, and I don't know if either Roy or Ethan can help me. I think that's probably within. Are you within the Newport Rural Fire Protection District?
I am just outside of it, and I forget what the last previous district attorney. He's since moved on, but he wrote me a letter that I failed to submit. But basically, it would have put the city of Newport in charge of responding.
Well, the city wouldn't respond to anything within, obviously, their boundaries. And then the city also operates the Newport Rural Fire Protection District. Okay. There's not a separate fire department. So they would actually respond to anything within the boundaries of the Newport Rural Fire Protection District. So that wouldn't change. The transfer of the road wouldn't change anything there.
Okay. And then as regards, up until this point, I certainly don't have any complaints against the county maintenance. It was like having our own private maintenance department right to my gate. Would it be the city who I approach to find out how they're going to, on one level, they're going to accept their responsibilities? Because we have, on an annual basis, or, even more frequently than that, slides that impact the reservoir. We have trees that come down on a regular basis. Yeah.
And I would say yes, but no. And you can go back, and we can help you with, because the commissioners had some of those concerns too. What were the plans the city doing? The city manager did come and give a presentation to the Board of Commissioners, I don't know, a month ago or so, maybe. And actually, there's some stuff. There's a letter that he wrote to the commissioners, and then he came and spoke to the commissioners about what the city's plans are in the future.
And who was that?
That was Spencer Diebel.
Oh, okay.
So let me, Norm, I have the same concerns. It's public access and your property being, you're still in the county.
Right.
So I guess he would still be responded to by the county sheriff since he's outside of the city.
Yeah, this is an interesting, there's some, but there's interagency agreements in terms of who responds to what, when, and where. But I'm thinking, if Norm was thinking if there was issues along the road or the reservoir.
But he's actual property.
Property, yeah, that would be the sheriff's department that would respond to that.
Okay. And then along the road it would be the...
the city police department.
And do they have any interagency agreements that, to respond quickly if somebody's in the area or something
well,
like
yeah,
that?
Well, there are some things. I mean, dispatch looks at those kinds of issues, who's available in what area there. Even though there are specific jurisdictional boundaries, the agencies normally respond, especially if there's if the situation warrants, that's whoever's there responds.
Or is this the only public hearing that's going to take place before the transfer, or is there going to be an additional one?
I can't tell you for sure what the city process is in order for them to adopt the municipal legislation, whether they'll hold a hearing or just put it as an action item. My understanding is the city's procedures would allow for comment whether or not there's a formal hearing or not on anything.
Is there actually a city representative attending this meeting?
No, not this one.
The reason I ask is I'm sure I will have other questions that I...
And I would direct you actually to the city manager, Spencer Neville. He's the one who would set the agenda, and he may refer you to the public works director, in terms of questions about maintenance, but he's the one who will discuss and set forth the procedure they'll use to move forward on their part.
And then going forward, what's your procedure exactly right now? This is purely and simply the public input part of it. What's the next subsequent step?
If the board desires to move this forward, kind of moving the next step, they would adopt an order, and I've got a draft of an order in here that they can utilize. That makes the offer of transfer of jurisdiction to the city. So that sets in motion then the city process. And the city would have, I think we said, until March 31st then to decide whether or not to accept the transfer.
Okay.
And adopt that appropriate municipal legislation. I love that term, appropriate municipal legislation. Right. So.
Okay. Well, does anybody have a question for me? I don't have any other questions at this point. So
I sense you've got a concern. I have a concern, too, because there's a lot more at stake here. There's the public access to the reservoir. And it sounds like the city's plan is to change the reservoir, put a dam about where the road turns there. Yeah, and then the road will go around the opposite side.
Yeah, they're actually doing core samplings. They brought in I think it's basically a design-build organization. They laid out the exact location for the dam, which is below this dam and just before it. In the second reservoir and just outside of the culvert. And they're doing core samplings now, and they sent us notification they're actually going to close the road, except for us, until, during the course of this month, and put a core driller in on the reservoir. They're going to put a barge in there and put a crane there. But, how do you respond? The state basically seeds the reservoirs with fish, two, three times a year. How does that?
Well, that's been one of my questions, was concerned because today they stopped all stocking of trout into the streams, so the reservoirs and the lakes are the only stocked trout now in the Western Oregon. And it's, trout fishing is even bigger than salmon fishing. It's the largest fishery and one of the biggest revenue sources to ODF&W. And I'm on ODF&W's budget committee, so I'm worried about access. Spencer, when he came and testified, said he had no plans to change it, except for to maybe they'd have to shut it down when they're doing dam restoration work. But that's now, once they've got control of the property. Wayne, did we ever get any kind of written agreement or anything stating anything like that?
No, because they would be jurisdiction in charge of that with the road. But remember, and we had this discussion in terms of the issues around the reservoir itself, that's owned by the city. We can't really control what they do or don't do.
Right.
But you express those concerns to them, and that's on the public record.
Decisions during the course of this whole procedure, which has taken close to 3 or 4 years at this point, which I have attended all the meetings, I have a right-of-way, a legal right-of-way that was granted by the city when Warrens owned, they owned initially 25 acres, and the city took over 8 of those acres, I own. They gave them permanent right-of-way to subsequent owners of the property, that being me, and I produced that right-of-way. And it wasn't until I produced that right-of-way that there was an acknowledgement by the city that I had a right to access of that of my property. And so I guess what I'm leading at is that to a certain extent it's convenient for them to say what will get them past every legal hurdle during the course of a procedure, and then as they've done now, theoretically they have entered into a maintenance contract with the county, which I understand the county would just as soon not be in, but they entered into it in good faith and led me to believe that was going forward going to be the case, and now I have come to understand that is no longer the case. And so why is it that they're allowed to enter into an agreement during the course of public scrutiny and then dissolve that agreement subsequently?
And I would say that's a question for the city, because again, the city was the one that proposed the maintenance agreement, and we were willing to go along with that as long as they paid for everything. And then they now apparently have made some other arrangements to do maintenance for the road.
Or not.
That's a question you'd have to ask the city. Yeah, that's I understand what you're saying. I do.
Yeah. Okay. All righty.
Okay. Well, is there any other public comment? Please sign your name to the... Okay. Seeing no other public comment, I'll close the hearing. Board deliberation.
Well, I'm trying to remember how many times we've discussed this issue, and while I certainly share Mr. Ferber's concerns, it's really part of a bigger process where the city is trying to address seismic issues with the dams that currently create reservoirs, and there's, again, as has been said, certain limitations. I think certainly Chair Thompson has articulated the concerns we have about accessibility, both for recreational purposes and for residents along the road. But there's a certain, realistically, there's a certain limitation as to what we can do other than voice our concerns, get assurances that those concerns are shared by the representatives of the Newport City Council and the city manager's office. So it's not an ideal situation, but there are some issues as far as water and seismic stability of the dams that are trying to be addressed.
I would agree with that. I would agree with all of that. I think given the circumstances, though, the best thing is for us to move forward with this transfer, and I think we have made a pretty strong public record, and hopefully the city moves forward in good faith and fulfills its commitments. But if they don't, we do have a public record to fall back on and hold them accountable. So with that, I would move that we approve this proposed order completing the jurisdictional, or are we initiating or completing?
Well, actually, what we're doing, the order would offer transfer, surrendering jurisdiction of this road to the city of Newport upon their acceptance.
I would so move.
And I'll second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion passes. We move down to the continuation of legalization of Southeast 23rd Street, Lincoln City, County Road 107.
Mr. Chair, could you reopen the hearing on this?
We'll open the public hearing on that, sorry. And we'll receive a comment from Wayne Belmont and Roy Kidd.
And Commissioners, Ethan Nicely from the Lincoln County Surveyor's Office is also here to answer any questions we might have concerning the legalization. I just want to note for the record, and I see that Mr. Outerkirk on behalf of Larry Morris, and he has written an additional letter. You have copies of that. And we'll just make sure that gets into the letter. I don't know, Mr. Bartolos, if you have any additional. If you do, it's fine when you come forward. Yeah. Just make sure you get it to Tanya so we can do that. So we'll discuss the contents of the letter coming up. But I'll turn it over to Mr. Kenyon first to talk about some additional information he has developed based on our first hearing.
During the first portion of the hearing, there were some questions that came up regarding required right-of-way width, specifically at the time it was City of Lincoln City, if and when this area actually became part of the city limits, what City of Lincoln City would require. I actually did some other research within our own the county's TSP, Transportation System Plan, and I came up with some numbers for that. To start with, Southeast 23rd Drive is listed as a functional class of rural major collector. And what happens here is the county's road system, along with every other county in the state and actually the state highways, they're given a functional class. And it varies from rural local roads to minor collectors, major collectors, and different levels of arterials. State highways tend to be arterials. Roads such as most of the county roads along these state highways are classified as some kind of a collector. Basically what it is, the name says it all, it basically collects the traffic and puts it into a major system for transportation one way or the other. And so based on the fact that 23rd Street is listed as a major collector within the county's TSP.
The TSP is what? Please.
Transportation System Plan.
Thank you.
It states that the required right is 60 to 80 feet. On the Lincoln City side, their TSP, Transportation System Plan, also has 23rd Street listed as a collector. And under their description of a collector, the right-of-way width for 23rd, in their case, is 55 to 71 feet. They actually give a larger variance, but still it's relatively the same. And also within their transportation system plan, they show, and this is looking down the road, and I'm not sure how far, but any plan is a long-range goal. But it actually shows that they have 23rd Street listed as a road that would at some point in time receive sidewalks. Now, you know, that is dependent upon development and need, but they actually recognize the fact that that may actually happen sometime in the future. So, anyway, that's where we're at with, you know, necessary right-of-way width. It actually now is a 60-foot right-of-way, which fits into the plan.
Roy, I'm going to do something here. It's would you mind stepping back? And I want to postpone this. There is one person here that has to catch a bus in a few minutes.
Sure.
And I was made aware before I came in the meeting for about 5 minutes of a public comment, and then we'll postpone this and bring it right back.
Yes.
So, Mr. Peltier, you wanted to speak on public comment, and I found out about it, and you said you had to catch a bus in just a few minutes. So,
thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Please make it brief. And
you know how loquacious I am.
We've got 5 minutes at maximum you can go.
We're losing ground on the homeless issue and affordable housing issue for our people, and I'm asking for your support of any nonprofit or nascent nonprofit endeavors. London McCabe House is on Facebook. We've spent 5 years working to create transitional housing in South Lincoln County. We have failed thus far. I recently was up in Chinook Winds Casino Resort. A grandmother who had lost her daughter was sleeping under a bridge in McMinnville. I invited her to Lincoln City. She stayed with me for 2 nights. Her mom paid money for a room. Her daughter had, she lost a daughter. She was in the grieving process. We have 717 homeless at-risk children in Lincoln County. We are number one in homeless children in the state of Oregon. We have veterans on the streets. We have sick persons, of which a woman in Walport, my community, stayed with a retired naval veteran, lieutenant commander of a destroyer, my friend Charles Riddle. She was at risk of pneumonia and hypothermia. We are going to see more people dying on our streets, so I'm asking for your help, your leadership, your guidance, your ideas, because we're absolutely out of time. You know how terrible weather we had recently, and I'm from Wisconsin, so I know what terrible weather is. Did you see my letter to the editor in the News Times last week, Friday?
Yes.
We need congressional help. These problems, of course, are systemic in our country. But I would rather us not be number one in homeless children in the state of Oregon. I'd rather us change that number with your help. I think that we can do that. And there are many important issues that come across your desk. But the welfare of our people here is at stake. And we need a facility. We need a structure, an infrastructure, so that we can better serve our own people. I'll work for free. I'm trained to be a social worker. I'm pretty much out of debt. I've worked all my life. I'll live on donated food and clothes. I don't care. But we need a place where we can help our people. And at times, there is absolutely no shelter facilities in all of Lincoln County. We have 200 families trying to get into Samaritan House for women and children. The children who are at risk in the Lincoln County School District will be the leaders of our community in 25 years. We must assist them I spoke to Steve Boynton, the superintendent of the Lincoln County School District, a few weeks back, and I said thank you for basically providing de facto human services to the kids, feeding them and after-school programs. They do a great job. I'm asking for your help. Any ideas you have? I emailed Bill Hall when he was in Washington, bothering him over on the other side of the country even. I know that you guys defer to Bill on human services issues, Doug and Terry. We need your help. Please help us. Okay? Thank you.
Thank you very much. Be sure and sign your name. And well, Bill may be the sole one, but believe me, I'm sure Doug and I both are equally interested in this issue, and good luck catching your bus. Thank you for coming.
Thank you. Share your concerns.
Okay, we'll restart the hearing. I guess that's it. Sorry about that, but I was looking at the time and going, if I was waiting for a bus and I knew it was going to leave a certain time, I'd want a couple extra minutes.
That's perfectly fine. So, anyway, the question came up. We looked into it. Those were the numbers that I came up with between the two plans, the county's and the city plan. I don't know that, as far as I was concerned, or any kind of homework that I was supposed to do, there really was anything more, unless you have additional questions now.
I have just a quick question. Just is there city sewer and water out there to the east end of the property, the road at this point?
Not that I'm aware of.
Okay. Given that I guess I'll call them topographic constraints, both vegetation, wetlands, slopes, those kinds of things, where most likely would those utilities be located?
At the time that they're extended, they would be located somewhere within the road prism, so within the right-of-way.
And based on what you've seen out there, the existing utilities, are they on the south or the north side of the road, or both, or what?
Well, the locate marks that I've seen, the communication line, I'm assuming it was probably phone, and I don't know if there's anything else in there, if it's TV or what, but it was actually on the north side of the road, approximately 10 feet from the edge of pavement in on the back end. There is a natural gas line in there. Depending on who you talk to, it seems to be in different places. I'm not exactly sure if it's actually within the right-of-way in that area. I was actually told it ran up on a hill, but I've heard difference, but it's back there somewhere. Front end, right off 101, I'm only guessing because I actually didn't see any locate marks up front, but I'm assuming that they follow right along the shoulder, either on the north or south side. Most likely it would be on the ditch side. That's typically where they put it when things are tight, but I can't tell you for sure.
So that creates a question in my mind. Assuming eventually these utilities are located out there, is it fair to say that there are certain constraints if you're looking at a 30-foot right-of-way versus a 60-foot right-of-way? I mean, are we tearing up roadway to put in utilities, or advantages, disadvantages?
Usually, from my experience, whenever a new sewer line or a new water line is put in, the road does get tore up in areas. They tend to run water line relatively straight and cut corner to corner. Sewer line, I don't have a lot of experience with it, but I do know that they don't run usually horizontal or perpendicular to the roadway. They kind of go back and forth, and depending on where the laterals are going to run, whether it's on the south side or the north side, they locate where it's most convenient for them. But what I do know is the utilities don't locate themselves on top of each other. They're spaced side by side. And so usually when they're going to design a new line, new utility, they'll go out and they'll actually locate where all the other existing utilities are and decide where it is most convenient and where it works for them to actually occupy some space. And so when you have communication lines on one side and maybe gas line on the other side, they have to try to find some kind of space in between. So it could be in the roadway, it could be in the shoulder, it could be in the ditch line, or it could be in all three, actually. So they try to utilize whatever space is available and where their install is the easiest.
Last question I have. You've looked at both the transportation safety system plans for Lincoln City and Lincoln County. Mm-hmm. Any indication on the future plans for that road beyond its existing roadway? In other words, extending it.
As far as extending the road?
Yes.
I did not see anything where they addressed anything about an extension of the existing road.
Okay.
There is an easement beyond the county right-of-way. But yeah, I didn't see anything where there was any plans to extend the road. Everything that I've seen actually referenced the road as it exists now.
Okay. So, Bill, any comments?
Just a question maybe related to the extension of the road. That basically, by understanding from the maps and having driven it, that it butts up to what's now zoned forest land. Is that correct?
At the end of the center. Using that question.
Yeah. So, okay. To FM.
So, at this point, then, if there's no other comment.
Maybe just one more. Because we have Mr. Nicely here, who actually did the work on the survey, so maybe we can just a couple of quick questions. You actually referenced some existing surveys in the work you did here, correct?
Correct.
Yeah, on the western end of the area that we're proposing to legalize, what was in those surveys? What was the width of the right of way that was shown in those surveys?
Well, in five out of six of them, 60 feet.
Okay.
There was one that was sort of a cartoon, so it'd be hard to say what the width was intended to be. We have surveys starting in 76 out there, the oldest being by Dale Haller, and other surveys following have utilized his work. And then in 79, there's a survey by Darius Ferguson, or Lester Fultz, 79, and that was for Mr. Phillips. And he followed the apparent center line of Thorpe County Road. He set a nail at the approximate center of the travel road, so he used the travel road, which is the same approach we're proposing for the legalization here. Survey 11665 was James Paith in 1987, and it tied into Haller's work, so one builds on the other, and he also labels it as 60 feet. Next up was 87, a survey by Darius Ferguson, surveyor up there for Michael Phillips. And he also says his approximate right-of-way location based on existing center line, so the traveled way. And he sets his rods at a 60-foot right-of-way. The next survey is 2007. It's also by Mr. Ferguson. And so he finds his own rod from his previous work. And this is for Michael Phelps, which I suspect is Phillips, but I'm not certain on that if it changed hands to a Phillips. But he says approximate right away based on existing center line, 60 foot. And finally, just this past year, we have another one. This is for William Geddes, and this is across the street. And he, same thing, approximate right-of-way based on existing center line, he has 60 feet. So in our survey, we recovered four monuments from these surveys we mentioned, and as much as possible, we held existing monumentation so that our right-of-way really passes through the right-of-way that was surveyed before. In some cases, just because of trying to make our curves pretty, there might be a slight difference. For example, this survey for Mr. Geddes, we passed through right through the right-of-way monument that he shows on the north. The monuments that he shows that he set on the south were 3 inches of one of them, 6 inches of the other. And finally, the other corner down there, we held the oldest rod that there was out there. So basically, our survey proposal for realigning things is in harmony with these surveys, which go back to 1976, I believe it was.
Okay. Okay. Maybe Mr. Kenyon can stay here for just a minute, because let's talk a little bit about the other end of the road. And we're just trying to anticipate some of the questions that might come up there. I know that you've gathered some information related to discussions that the county had with on behalf of the Morrises. And I'm going to use the term Morrises because there's been different parties, different portions of the Morris family that have been involved with this over the course of years, that the ownership has changed a little bit. And I think that where we stand currently, and Mr. Alderkirk will correct me if I'm wrong, it's Larry Morris, and I'm not sure if he's as a trustee or if he's the actual owner.
He's a contract purchaser.
Contract
from
purchaser.
From the trust.
From the trust, okay, of the property as it stands
of
now.
The eastern portion, Devil's Lake has another piece that is owned by Devil's Lake Rock Company.
On the west, right. So there's, and we're talking now about the western portion of the road where it runs into 101. And again, there was a number of discussions that went on related to Southeast 23rd at the time that ODOT was doing that very large construction project through Lincoln City. In essence, what occurred there was there was a proposal to realign 23rd more to the north. And please correct me if I don't get the exact things correct here. But there was this proposal to realign 23rd, but the arrangement was that while the county would have to be apply for the permits for that and would review where that realignment was, there was no cost associated with the county moving that. It would be totally on the Morrises to work the final arrangements with ODOT to pay for all the costs of relocation. I think there was some additional right-of-way to be dedicated in addition to what would be utilized, the existing right-of-way, the paper right-of-way. It wouldn't follow exactly where the current road is now, the area we're proposing to legalize. And all this was actually formalized in an agreement with ODOT. That was entered into prior to the construction of the 101 improvements. And what ODOT and the parties agreed to at that time was that ODOT knew they were going to move forward with the project at some time. There was some question as to whether or not the 23rd Street realignment would be accomplished. So the agreement was basically ODOT would accept the proposed realignment if it was in place and approved to that realignment. If the realignment was not done, they would do their improvements to the existing alignment, which is what actually occurred out there. What's unclear from the agreement, and we're only speculating a little bit here, is that once ODOT made those improvements, obviously that's going to be a significant cost to now, if there's a proposal to realign after the project, there likely will be significant costs associated with that intersection with 101 now. And again, I'm speculating, but given the fact that ODOT, you know, gave the choice to make the realignment and improve or not, I can't imagine that ODOT. I mean, I don't know, number one, whether ODOT would approve a realignment now after that construction's been done. That's a question number one. Question number two is, I'm very sure that if they did, all those costs would be on the party doing the realignment. And just to make it clear for the record, our position has been throughout this that the county would not pay anything for the realignment. We would just be the permitting agency, as we're responsible for under law. So there's some question. I mean, I had thought originally that maybe ODOT actually said in the agreement that once this is done, no more realignment, but it doesn't actually say that. So I really don't know what ODOT would say now if there's a proposal to realign from where they improved to. But that's something that we've now learned.
That's also the West End.
I'm sorry, the West End. Yes. So I don't know, Roy, if you want to add anything to that.
Well, I'll just try to summarize really quickly. You know, we have really two slightly different issues, one on the west, one on the east. The one that Wayne was just speaking of, actually, you know, it started, the conversation started in November of 06. And I wasn't involved in any of that, but I was able to go back and retrieve all of Jim Beisman's emails and put together basically a timeline of events, conversations, agreements, non-agreements. And I think what really hurt the whole thing was the fact that in about a six-month period of time, there was a lot of conversation, there was a lot of things settled, there was a lot of agreements, there was a lot of things lined out, and then the ODOT project got tabled. End of June in 07, Jim Beisman notifies people that ODOT has shelved the project, and things sat idle basically for about 4 years, 4.5 years before this thing fired back up. And in that time, I think within ODOT, people left, new people came in, there was some things forgotten, some things that, you know, weren't documented well. And so what was supposed to happen actually didn't happen. And so, and what that is, you know, in this case, the road where it exists doesn't fit in the right-of-way. And there was an attempt to rectify that in 06 and 07, and it didn't quite make it.
Okay. So, we go down to public comment now?
Yes.
So we'll open the public comment on this issue, 23rd Street. Just sign in and come forward.
Hey, call. Sign in on the way up.
Yeah, okay.
Thank you, Mr. Kenyon. Commissioners, thanks for giving us this time. I represent Larry Morris. I provided you with two letters. The second one contained the operative agreement with ODOT and also a copy of the Loomis survey that was done for Devil's Lake Rock Company back in 2006. Issue for my client is that there has been a considerable amount of work done in an effort to address the location of Southeast 23rd where it's currently located. There were a variety of circumstances apparently on ODOT's side and also on the Devil's Lake Rock Company side in terms of the demise of Clarice Morris and ownership issues with respect to Devil's Lake Rock Company and changes in trustees. But the goal for the Morris Group was always to have Southeast 23rd at the intersection of 101 be moved into the public right-of-way. And in addition to surveys and legal counsel, Perkins Coie in particular, working with them to put together the cooperative agreement with ODOT, they also did infrastructure work in that area that included sewer lines, drainage sewer lines, not sanitary sewer lines, for water in that area. And as folks have commented in the past, and you're probably aware, that is the Morris property there has been looked at as a potential development site for some kind of significant retail of a size. And the concern is that if the legalization occurs where it is now, based on the survey that was provided to you and the county surveys as well, you can see that there is significant encroachment onto the Morris Tract. And the concern I've got is if we get this thing legalized, at that particular location where it is, then it may have an unintended consequence of limiting the potential future development. In my conversations with County Council, Mr. Belmont pointed out that the proposed legalization, you correct me if I'm wrong, here in that particular area is 30 feet. I think Commissioner Hunt picked up on that. And what we have from these TSPs are certainly something in excess of that. Also, with respect to the development that was done by ODOT out in that area, the terminus of the project that they did is right at that intersection. So while it is true that they basically attached or rather joined it at its current location, it's undeveloped on the north side. So I'd submit that that's an opportunity for this to go forward at some point in time. I raised in my letter the fact that this is kind of an anomalous piece of ground for the county, and I don't know whether Lincoln City, if and when, they're going to annex it, but I think that Mr. Belmont made a good point when he said sooner or later the probabilities are that's going to happen and the county's going to be out of this situation. And I appreciate and respect the fact that there are other property owners further east who want to move forward with development projects, and that that is one of the primary justifications for the commissioners, as I understand it anyway, picking this issue up at this point in time. When I spoke with Mr. Belmont, he described a couple of possible options available to the commissioners, which I'm sure there are others, but the two he presented would be legalization of Southeast 23rd and in its entirety is presented. The option two that he suggested was for moving forward with the legalization of Southeast 23rd to the east of that portion of it that is currently shown as a 30-foot width, if I understood what he told me correctly. I think all of us would agree with the fact that ultimately for this kind of a roadway, a 30-foot isn't going to be adequate over the long haul. For these reasons, I think there is sufficient justification for the commissioners to deliberate on this and to conclude that assuming legalization is going to proceed with respect to a portion of that, that that portion that currently is 30 feet wide be left as it is and not legalized at this time, because it's pretty darn clear to everybody here that it's going to be seriously reworked at some point in the future. And I'd be happy to be educated, but I can't see a material benefit to the county or the property owners that use it in legalization of it where it is right now with respect to the 30-foot right-of-way. So I'll stop and see if anybody has any questions of me.
Any questions?
No.
Thank you.
Okay. Anyone else? Public comment.
I'm at the call of the commissioner. That was safe, right?
Good morning. My name is Dennis Bartoldis. I've got just a handout here that I'd like to give you to supplement what I use for and address some additional issues.
Thank you.
Or questions that came up. Last time when we had the original hearing in this matter, there were several questions that came up, and I wanted to do something to address those. One of the questions that came up was whether or not there would be any further development or that would be foreseeable in extending Southeast 23rd Street. I've spoken with Mr. Husing about this, and I know that he has a map that I don't know if he's already submitted to you or is going to submit to you that shows the zoning in the area. I had submitted a similar map that was taken from a little bit higher view that showed everything around the edge of this area to the east is zoned for conservation. And Commissioner Hunt had raised the question, well, does that mean it's not going to be developed? Well, there are statements in both the transportation system plan and the county plan that show limiting factors in developing any timber conservation land. There's also comments and plans that that Lincoln City has made that shows they're not going to be extending the area there. We have been requesting on behalf of Mr. Phillips that the commission reduce the right-of-way at least as it is along his property. That would be the first request. Or if you're not going to reduce it, then move it to the original right-of-way. Now, I think either one of those could accommodate Mr. Phillips' concerns. Please keep in mind that, and I talked to Mr. Atterkirk on a couple of occasions about this, and I guess that his concerns and my concerns are very similar, and that we're concerned that the original roadway was not built in the right-of-way. And that's why we're before you here today, because it was kind of a hit-and-miss proposition that when this road was built, it wasn't built in the right-of-way. So in this top sheet that I have given to you, it's basically findings that I would propose to support a reduced right-of-way less than 30 feet. The road actually, as we mentioned before, is 7/10 of a mile long. It terminates before it gets to the TC land, and there's no public access beyond just a few 100 feet or so beyond Mr. Phillips' property. And as we also talked about before, the commission has the ability to craft the location to meet the needs of the owners along the road. And if we look a little bit further west of this whole process, you'll see where one of the documents I submitted is this wetland area. And, for example, if you were to legalize the road to a full 60 feet in this area where the wetlands are, the fellow down here, the owners down here, basically lose all the usable portion of their property and the rest would be in wetlands. And I was thinking about, you know, coming back before the commission today, you know, and I'll just say it very, I guess, straightforward, is that my biggest concern, my biggest fear is that we'll say, oh, that's a nice survey that Mr. Nicely prepared, and it is. I mean, he's done what he was commissioned to do. But that doesn't mean that's the commission's only option. And what I'd like to do is do what works for the most property owners here. And you can take what he did, and you can craft that. And what I'm asking is that we do what's right, what's most beneficial to the most property owners, and not just say, oh, yeah, that's the center line, that's the easiest way to go, let's do that. And how would we apply that in particular to Mr. Phillips' property? It would be, if you're going to have it wider than 30 feet, if you're going to make it 40, 50, or 60 feet, then the right-of-way is south of his property. So you can adapt that drawing, because you're the ones that create the final order. You can adapt Mr. Nicely's survey and say, okay, in this area, we're going to move the road further south. We'll keep the paved road where it was. I mean, I agree, it doesn't make sense to move that, but we're only going to take 8 or 10 feet on the north side, and we'll take the rest of the right-of-way that we're going to need on the south side. You have the ability to do that. The statute gives you that ability. And I think in that sense, it's a pragmatic solution there. Because Mr. Geddes, who owns the property to the south, it's just across the road to the south of Mr. Phillips, said he didn't really care that it, he was fine if the right-of-way was further south. He was okay with that. The other very practical consideration, and I think Mr. Husing could speak to this because he and I have had conversations about this, and I know when he was before you a number of months ago when you made that amendment to the ordinance to amend the setbacks in this area, if we're really concerned about protecting industrial land, which is at a scarcity in Lincoln City, as all the evidence has shown, the way we preserve the most industrial land would be to have the least intrusion on Mr. Phillips' property. Because in the area along there, his is the flattest area along the road. And taking his property reduces the industrial land base, and it also, as we discussed last time, reduces the taxes, because when he develops that land, the county's going to collect a lot of taxes on it. On the other hand, on the Geddes property with the hill, you're not going to do anything else along the road there. The area of his property that's developed is up on top. It's up out of that right-of-way to the south. So you could craft a win-win situation for everybody by doing that. You could protect Mr. Phillips' property to the extent you can. You could still have the paved road where it is. Mr. Geddes said he didn't really have any concerns because the usable part of his property is up there. And you can still have a wider right-of-way that addresses the concerns of future utilities. Now, what I've indicated here is that, and in here is that the under number 7, I reference certain pages in your transportation system plan that shows it's not going to be extended, and then also I've referenced the Nelscott Gap plan. And there's a map in there. That's the most recent map that Lincoln City has done to plan that area. It's called the Nelscott Gap Plan. And if you see in there where Mr. Phillips' property is, and east of that, they basically call it an employment district. Now, I noticed they have a lot of nice drawings and everything for the rest of it, but once they get to the employment district, that's the employment district. So they're agreeing that for what Mr. Phillips wants to do and the other owners down there that's part of the industrial base up there, that they're going to leave that like it is. Now, the other thing that I need to raise, and you know, because I'm a lawyer and because I raise legal issues, is that as far as I can tell in researching this matter, there's never really been a takings challenge based upon 368 with the road legalization status. And here's my concern. The road clearly here was not built in the right-of-way. Mr. Phillips had nothing to do with that. I would indicate that the surveys that Mr. Nicely referenced that had been done for Mr. Phillips were Mr. Phillips' attempt to is a long-term process of trying to develop his property, and because surveyors were telling him where the center of the traveled roadway was, doesn't mean that they were saying that's where the property lines were, because his deed runs to the edge of the right-of-way, and we interpret that to mean where the right-of-way was established by the original deeds and surveys when it was done a long, long time ago, and that's definitely south of his property. And he, now, you know, you can argue that there's an inverse condemnation claim to the extent the road existed and was paved on his property. But I don't think that that gives us the additional 30 feet if you took the 60 feet right away out of the center. So from our position, certainly there's been a taking on that, and that would be a compensable taking to Mr. Phillips to the extent you're outside a few feet out of the traveled right away. Like I say, the statute does not address that. The statute only addresses if there's a building there that was built in good faith, then that becomes a compensable issue according to the statute. But, like I say, under Oregon law, I haven't seen any challenge to the statute itself. So I'm raising that because I got to raise it. Hopefully this all gets worked out and we can come to something that works for everybody. But I needed to raise that issue. Now, the other photos that I've submitted here, and I'm not going to spend a lot of time dwelling on them, but it basically shows, number one, it shows some of the challenges that even if you have a 60-foot right-of-way, for example, on the wetlands map, the challenges of what you'll face in trying to expand the road. And in talking with Mr. Kenyon the other day, he said, as realistically, that if there was going to be ever any addition to that road, you're looking maybe at a couple feet of pavement on either side if you got it to a couple feet wider. But this is in the urban growth boundary, and ultimately that would probably be something that the city would have to deal with. And in the Nelscott Gap Plan and in the Transportation System Plan, they indicate there's no design or anticipation that the urban growth boundary is going to be expanded in this area. And if we look at this, the maps, the roadway, the county roadway ends well before it gets out of that industrial district, and the easements that have been discussed are just basically private easements that get the rest of those industrial properties accessed. There's no, to my knowledge, public right-of-way through there. It's just simply private easement to get to those other properties. A couple of these pictures also show heavy equipment. This one picture shows one of the Geddes dump trucks going up to the Geddes property right across from Mr. Phillips. As I indicated before, dump trucks, I've seen them on that road. They all drive responsibly. They don't seem to have any issues. And then at the end there, we've got heavy equipment that is carried back and forth over the road. And again, there's really been no issue of that. The others just show maintenance pictures of the road and then the infamous culvert. You know, if this road is really going to be used year-round in the future, and it'll probably be the city that does it, if they do implement their Nelscott Gap Plan, they're going to have to address these issues of the wetlands in there. And, you know, one thing I found over years and years is that it's nice to be a consultant because you don't have to do the deal with the end results. So you can draw up nice things like the Nelscott Gap Plan that was done by a group of consultants and not really necessarily worry about them. Gosh, there's a road running through TC land. I wonder if we can really do that. Or what are we going to do with all these wetlands? Oh, we're going to restore Baldy Creek, all of which are talked about in the Gap Plan. So, you know, right now I'm trying to deal with the reality that we're dealing with now and being a pragmatist. And the reality is, whether it's 30 feet or 60 feet, my primary concern is no surprise to anyone here is that I want to protect Mr. Phillips' interests because that's what he's asked me to do. And I think that we can make this a win-win by saying we'll either keep the right-of-way narrower, or if we're going to expand it, we can carve it out around his property because of the way the road is situated, because of the desire to preserve industrial land, because he's got a plan that he's trying to move forward with that's going to add jobs, that's going to add tax base to the county, all of which are good things. So in this way, you could actually have your cake and eat it too if we try to protect his side and put more of the right-of-way on the other side, which you have the legal ability to do. And I've talked to Mr. Husing, and I think he would generally back up to the general concepts that there's probably not going to be any development in the TC area, and that industrial lands are important for the county, and they're a job motivator. But I'm not going to speak for him. I just turn to him if he would like to comment on that. But first I'd ask Mike if you have anything that you'd like to...
not really. I think Dennis has spoke fairly clearly into to the issues.
Okay. So, with that, yeah.
Commissioners, would you like me to address? I think I just can't not address the one issue that Dennis raised. And I understand what he's saying about the not being any litigation around potential takings claim based on the statute. But you have to remember, this is a process that includes, and if you look at it, there's a great deal of jurisprudence in the state of Oregon around prescriptive rights, public rights created through utilization of property and doing that. That's very clear. And if you look at the way the statute is set up, that's what this is recognizing. What it's recognizing is sometimes the manner in which right-of-ways are created, including the dedication of right-of-ways by instrument, don't match what's actually been put on the ground and what's been utilized for years and years and years by the public. And this is the process that you go through to straighten out that particular thing. And it's no different in that sense than, and I'm just going to use the term prescriptive rights, but that's one of many legal theories that, are used to preserve public rights in traveled ways. And so that's why I think you haven't seen any challenges to this particular matter, because it would withstand that scrutiny. Now, obviously, you may argue about the width and breadth of what was done here, the legalization. That I understand what you're saying.
Obviously, and you'll notice I said I'm not arguing about the travel surface, but there's a whole body of law about what constitutes constructive prescriptive rights. And
I think
in the private sector, those have gotten much harder to retain with the recent Supreme Court case that came out here about a month or so ago. But, I mean, we could have that discussion, but you understand that I have to raise it.
I'm hoping
we don't get there. I hope we look for the pragmatic solution that I proposed.
Yeah. And I just want to say that from a legal standpoint, what we're doing here is very much in line with what's allowed under law.
Okay. Any other public comment then? Roy?
Just two things. The first thing is, in front of the Phillips property, we have to remember that there's already an existing utility. And that utility appears to be 10 feet from the edge of existing pavement. So from the center line of existing road out to that utility is currently 20 feet, give or take a foot or two. Utilities actually need room beyond their utility to do their repair work on their line. And so you would think their rational would be possibly another 5 feet beyond that line so that they can get a backhoe in there, they can get, well, you know, they can excavate the line, do whatever they need to do. So we're talking right there, basically 25 feet from center line of the existing road. So that's already there, that's in the ground, and I think that we have to make sure that we remember that the utility exists. Also, the question come up about wetlands and future development. I want you to remember that about 3 years ago, 2 years ago, we actually did a fairly substantial project on East Devil's Lake Road, flattened swamp. Yes, there are hoops that have to be jumped through. There's things that have to be done. Mitigation is one of the big things, but it is possible. So, just because there's the existence of wetlands does not detour construction. It just makes it at times a little more complicated.
Okay. Can I ask one more question? Because I don't know that is there any daily traffic counts?
We actually do. I brought with me counts starting at mid-90s. It seemed like for some reason, right around the mid-90s, the traffic actually jumped quite substantial. I'm not sure what. It must have been some kind of a development that happened around that time. But right now, the counts show that average daily traffic on that road. And the count is actually taken at about just beyond where this creek crosses the road. So it's beyond the Morris property. It's beyond the concrete plant. It's right where those first houses start on your right-hand side. And we're looking at an average of about 400, 450 cars a day at that point.
And does that relate to anything to the arterial collector or those kinds of statuses?
Well, it does. In the county's transportation plan, it states that average daily traffic for a collector road, a major collector, is between 300 and 1,000 cars, and so we actually fit.
And that's before any further development occurs out there.
Right, that's as things exist now. We had a count, actually, in 16, that for whatever reason, it was low. It was 298. It was below 300. But the four or five before that, from, like I said, mid-90s until just prior to 2016, they averaged right around that 400 mark.
Okay. So,
can you ask Mr. Phillips to address one issue on the utilities? Because he's really
familiar. Yes, please do. We're still in the public hearing.
prior to coming to the public hearings, we met with Roy Canyon and Mr. Belmont, Mr. Husing, to discuss some options for this before the legalization process. And one of the things that we were aware of was that the utility that Mr. Kenyon mentioned, which is the phone line, was somewhere around 10 feet from the edge of the pavement. And in order to reduce the right-of-way and get that into the right-of-way, I suggested that I would move that back into the move it closer to the road so that it wasn't so far over towards me, and still provide room for access for future use. So,
could I ask a question? I mean, you would be willing to pay for the cost of relocating the line?
Yeah, it's part of the development of my property, yeah. Okay. So, okay.
Well, I guess I would follow up that. So, is it that simple? Is the utility agreeable to it? What burden does that place on the utility for future costs and conveniences?
Well, I'm assuming that they wouldn't have a problem if they're not, it doesn't impact them as far as costs. I'm imagining that it's just a direct ferry wire, and to relocate it, we would probably put a conduit in so that it would be easier for them to install and remove and repair in the future.
So I have a couple of other questions unrelated to that. You had several surveys done, and I guess I'm not clear. The surveys were done, but you chose to, I guess, recognize certain parts of the survey but not others. What was the rationale for that?
Well, I think I can answer that. Mike can correct. I don't think he was trying to use certain parts of the survey or not. He was trying to determine different things about his property, and I think one of the things the surveyors were doing was alerting him to where the road was physically located as opposed to where the right-of-way was. And I think it was in about, it was the one that Darius Ferguson did in the 1980s that I think was the most complete one. And then that was when you were becoming aware that the right-of-way was further to the south and that your deed ran to the right-of-way. And his property was, you know, he didn't have any immediate plans for development. And there was another, and I'm not familiar with all the details, but the county basically reconfigured the end of the county road through an earlier proceeding where it had kind of gone further to the southeast, and then they straightened it out there. And that was done. That didn't have any further impact on Mr. Phillips' property. But based on those surveys, there's actually improvements to the east of Mr. Phillips' property that would be, that are in the current, that would extend way out into the right-of-way. Those improvements on the adjoining property to the east extend quite a ways further south with the fence around the FedEx building. So, I mean, I appreciate the fact that there were those previous surveys, but different surveyors can get a little bit different results, and I think Mr. Ferguson's survey in the 80s and then the one that he's done most recently in connection with the current project are the ones that we feel are the most accurate. And I think Mr. Nicely's survey basically concurs pretty closely with the Ferguson survey and where the actual road right-of-way is located as opposed to where the road is, because clearly the road right-of-way that was given to the county is quite a bit further south.
I would add that, you know, the difference between the survey and the legal description amounts to almost a half an acre. Part of that is also reflected in my tax statement that I get every year, which shows a larger amount of land than what the survey shows. So I'm actually paying taxes on part of the road.
Well, before we go on, I'd also like to clarify for the record that Mr. Phillips and I did meet. Prior to that, though, I had County Council Belmont speak with Mr. Bartolus and clarified that under the circumstances that would be permissible. But I'd like, for the record, for you to clarify that discussion.
Well, here's another one of those undetermined things, whether or not this particular proceeding is a legislative proceeding on behalf of the board or is a quasi-judicial. I just wanted to make sure that there was no problem with any of the participants here that would raise an issue of any kind of ex parte contact. So I do appreciate the fact that you mentioned that, that you did have a meeting with Mr. Phillips. Phillips.
And I concurred with Mr. Belmont's legal opinion in that issue, and said we were not going to raise any issues on that. Right. I appreciate that.
Right.
So, if I may, before Commissioner Hall's question, I'd like to ask another question. So, you know, certainly I support the idea of this project and jobs and the economic development. My question is, if we proceed with a 60-foot legalization as proposed, will you not do your project?
Possibly.
So
but it depends
you
on
don't have 60. The ability to adjust for the, 15 feet we're talking about?
For me, I've owned this property since 1979, and I've seen what's happened in the area and what's happened to the west of me. And, you know, we have this big, huge problem with the 30-foot right-of-way to the west of me, and it really makes no sense for there to be all of the traffic that I'm going to create or that's to the east of me and still have to deal with the 30-foot issue. And knowing the traffic, knowing the situation up there, I can't in my mind justify why you need a 60-foot right-of-way. If you do, as Dennis said, that's fine. Take it to the south where it already exists. It makes it easier for me. I have to accommodate parking and everything on my site. It's part of the conditional use permit is that, you know, I have to have parking. I got to have so much setback for my buildings. I've got to have meet all of their requirements, and, you know, every little bit helps to make more usable space.
Right, and I guess to parrot that, you can still have a 60-foot right-of-way if that's what you want. You can just move it to the south.
Just move it to the south.
And then you'll have the 60-foot right-of-way. Mr. Geddes has indicated he doesn't object. And then we could have a discussion with Public Works about the utilities, and Mr. Phillips offered to pay to move that one phone line a little bit further south. And so I would look at that as a doable solution. So you have a 60-foot right-of-way. Mr. Phillips has the use of his property. He's still losing some. He's just not losing the full half acre or so that would be under the current drawing. And that's totally legally what you have the ability to do if you want to do that. And then it seems like it works out for everyone. And quite frankly, Mr. Phillips has been the one most interested in this whole process. And so if others haven't come to object their concern about how it would affect their property, then they've had the opportunity. And maybe that's a way we can make it a win for everybody.
Bill? Yeah, Mr. Chair. My question was, you've indicated Mr. Geddes has no objection to the moving of the right-of-way to the south. Do you have anything in writing from him to that effect, or would you be able to obtain that?
I'm sure we could obtain it. He was here at the last meeting, and he stated on the record that he didn't have any concerns about really where the right-of-way was through there.
Right.
If you wanted us to get something in writing to put it in the record, I'm sure we could do that. But he was here last meeting and stated that, but I'm sure we could discuss with him and get that in writing for you.
And I don't know where my colleagues might be going with this, but if we did go in the direction of this, would you also be willing maybe to obtain something in writing from the telephone company that they would consent to the relocation of the utility line at your expense?
Yep.
And I suggest just remembering that as Mr. Kenyon said, we're not just talking about a single utility.
Right. But that's the only existing utility,
right?
Correct?
So the question that maybe you need, if you're even contemplating this, that we would need to do is look at the additional utilities that could be out there and talk to the agencies that provide that and say, would this adjustment of the right-of-way fit their future needs in terms of placing those utilities in the future?
Can I make a comment? The other utilities are already on the south side of the road.
The gas.
The gas and the power.
I'm talking about sewer and water eventually coming out.
Oh, if the city wanted to extend sewer.
And remember, we're not just as this issue has come up, you know, hundreds of years or decades. I know we are talking about that. But I think that's what you're preserving. That's what you create when you do this, the ability to actually extend those utilities if and when they get extended.
Okay.
Well, I guess we could engage in a discussion with them, and I guess, quite frankly, this is kind of the give and take I was hoping we would have, or we could discuss what are the things you'd like to see and what can we do to try to make this work for everybody. And that's why I had hoped this would be an interactive process.
Okay. So I guess that's one of the things that you would like to see is some kind of written comments from these people that can be entered into the record. Is that what you'd like?
I think so. I'm at least willing to entertain this, but if we had all of this, I would feel much more comfortable going in that direction.
Well, in my mind, there's no doubt that the 60-foot right-of-way is the right width.
Yeah, I'll agree on that.
I guess I have several questions about the implications of making this adjustment. There are obviously many property owners.
Let me interrupt you. I mean, that's basically under board deliberations we're talking now.
Okay.
We're still under public comment, so let's take the public comment. Roy, you had your hand up. Did you want to make one final? Okay. And we'll get through the public comment and move to deliberations.
Just wanted to revisit, I guess, what Mr.
Bartholdus
just said, that these surveys by Mr. Ferguson in particular weren't presenting the difference between a deeded right-of-way and the road. They don't show a deeded right-of-way at all. They just show the road. He based his road alignment on the existing. That's all they say. There's no expose.
So what you're saying is those surveys were done simply to determine the road and the right-of-way based on the road, not the deeded. They weren't designed to address the deeded right-of-way.
As far as the information on the surveys, yes.
Okay.
The situation that the road isn't splitting the goalposts of the deeded right-of-way has been known for a long time. One way to look at it is there's a defect in the written record. There's not a problem with the road, just the written record. So the legalization process is designed to make the physical road and the written record jive, and then everything lines up.
Couldn't have said it better. That's actually the reason why we have this process.
Exactly. One other thing, if I could.
Well, I'm sorry. Say that again, Commissioner.
No, that's exactly why we have the legalization process for this. And, in fact, that's so noted in the report you got from the surveyor's office.
And if I could.
So this is, I believe this is Mr. Geddes up to this point. Then you have a couple other owners on from there. It's also been mentioned a couple of times about the fence around the FedEx being an issue. Even though that FedEx, that new right-of-way there was 1980, or no, that's page 1980. I believe it was 1987 that they vacated a portion of this and then deeded over a new right-of-way alignment just from here on. Even though that was fresh, when they built FedEx, they put the fence out in even that right-of-way. So we aren't creating an issue with the fence around FedEx. We aren't fixing it, but it already exists.
Okay.
Okay. Then we'll close the public hearing if there's no other comments.
Mr. Chair,
we'll move to the Board of Deliberation.
Could I ask a question of Mr. Belmont?
Please.
Mr. Belmont, from a, I guess, a legal operational standpoint, what are your thoughts on us potentially proceeding with a partial legalization and leaving the easternmost portion for consideration at a later time as proposed by Mr. Outerkirk?
Well, given the kind of
question.
I mean, West.
Let's get the right side of the road.
Yes.
Actually, given what's kind of developed here and with the information that we've got, I think that probably is not a bad idea, at least until we can develop more information to proceed. And that's assuming that we want to get some certainty and move forward on behalf of Mr. Phillips, too, so that he can know once we do this, he can proceed with his development plan, whatever you end up doing with that. I think we can split it. I just want to make sure it's real clear for the record two things related to the westernmost portion, the 30-foot. Number one, and we've made it really clear through here, but based on what the record is out there, that the reason why we were looking at a 30-foot right-of-way is that is what was deeded out there. That's all we felt we could legalize, but we have said all along that's inadequate. So any argument that the 30-foot's out there, we or the City of Lincoln City or all the parties once further intensive development occurs out there, we'll be looking at that right-of-way in an appropriate manner, whether it's dedication as part of development, whether it's acquisition, however it might occur out there. That's not adequate right-of-way for the development potential of that property out there. So I want to make that clear, number one. Number two is that, just make it real clear that the record, and this has not changed, that any realignment of 23rd at its intersection with 101 will be, and I'll call it on the developer's dime, because it may not be the current property owner's, but it'll be the property owner developer. It's on their dime. There's no county commitment to do spend any money out there for any proposed realignment of 23rd. So I just want to make sure both of those things are very clear for the record. But if that were the case, you could make a logical distinction of taking that portion that lies east of the area that's 30 feet and just legalize that. That is an option.
Okay. I have another question for Mr. Belmont, if I could, please.
Mr. Bartoldis has cited our legal ability to reduce or realign a right-of-way. I've been trying to rack my memory, and I can remember one case in the 30 years I've been here, 12 as a commissioner, 18 as a reporter, and I can't really remember whether it was as a commissioner or watching from the press table, where I believe the board did realign a right-of-way to keep it from encroaching on an existing residential structure. So that's one evidence where the board did that. Is that correct?
And I think that's right.
So, okay.
And I'll look to Ethan if you remember seeing that. I don't know. I do recall at one point we did make an adjustment for an existing, in lieu of paying compensation or having that person have to move that structure, there was a small adjustment of the right-of-way in that area.
Can you think of any other cases?
No.
Okay. So, but there is a precedent where the board has done that.
Doug, any comments?
Well, I guess I don't. I'm not prepared yet to make a decision. I guess curious about the possibility of realigning it to accommodate property owners, but that's part of where I get hung up. You know, you start making accommodations for one, and yeah, the guy across the street says no problem, at least until he's maybe legally required to state it. And there are other property owners along the way, so I guess I'm curious about it, but I'm not convinced that it's the solution that I find of the best interest when you look at the long-range situation. And again, as I've stated, I think 60 feet is certainly a minimum in my mind, regardless of the alignment.
So I'll make the comment. Person that always feels that when I'm an elected official by the public, I have to represent the public's best well-being. In most cases, I don't give up easements, especially west of Highway 101. We keep getting that continuously in the process. But if a reasonable compromise that can be binding can be agreed on the parties, I would definitely take that consideration into my ability to vote in this case. So, Wayne, what's the procedure here? It sounds like we're...
Well, there's a couple of options. One is you can... there's actually, I guess, three options here. You can legalize, as presented to you, the entire length. That would be one. Option number two is you could legalize just that portion of the road from that's beginning with the 60-foot right-of-way east to the end. Or option three is you could direct staff to explore the possibility... And it sounds like with keeping a 60-foot right-of-way of what the impacts would be of realigning that right-of-way.
But I would want to see some binding agreements. In cases of coastal zoning, I've said if somebody can find a better solution for the public, like moving to a better location, I sure as heck would. And it sounds like there may be a compromise that at least keeps the public's in mind, its right-of-way in mind, but can be worked out between the landowners. But would there be the ability to make that binding in this?
Well, the legalization will establish the road. That's right. It basically so that makes it everything binding. Else that was of record and dissolves it, and that is the road. So the legalization completes that particular process.
Right. So
Mr. Chair, could I make a motion and see if everybody's comfortable with it? I would like to make a motion that we not proceed with the legalization at this time, but we refer the matter back to staff for further investigation, including focusing specifically on the practicality of realigning the right-of-way between the Phillips and Geddes properties and the things that, you know, and if Mr. Bartoldus, on behalf of Mr. Phillips, could obtain something in writing from Mr. Geddes indicating consent to the realignment, something from the phone company indicating that they're willing to relocate their lines, and at least something from the city weighing in that if and when they extending utilities there, that they would find altered right-of-way workable, practical, and with the understanding there's no final commitment on our part. But if I saw all those things at that point, then I would be inclined to want to realign as proposed by Mr. Bartoldus.
Well, can I suggest that maybe instead of saying as proposed, there may be a lesser amount of
realignment? Yeah, some adjustment.
Some adjustment is
whatever.
And I'd like to see, since the gas line is to the south, and if you move that to the south, you're covering that. They do it all the time, but it'd be nice to at least have something from the gas company that says they're not against it.
I guess I think we need to include all the utilities.
All the utilities.
Yes. Right.
Whether they're in place or future utilities could be in place.
Right.
I'd also like to know what the unintended consequences might be of making this adjustment. Again, I have concerns about other property owners along the highway saying, well, wait a minute, if you're going to do that, I want you to do this. And so I don't want to consider one change and then, in effect, change what other people along the entire stretch of the highway expected to happen.
We'll come back to you then. If that's the motion, if that's what you want.
You need a motion? Well, you made a motion.
Yeah. You want a clarification?
I just wanted to point out there is overhead power as well.
Oh, okay.
It's shown on page 5 of the
utilities.
Utilities,
you read that before.
Yeah.
And I also, can we have some latitude? Because I don't think we can just do this in front of the Phillips property. I think we actually might have to make adjustments if we do this all the way to the eastern end, or at least the possibility of doing that. I don't know. I guess I want to reserve the ability to look at that. You're basically talking to the eastern end.
Well, I think you need to look at the entire stretch.
Yeah.
Okay. So could I broaden or clarify my motion to say
that's true.
To consider moving the right-of-way to the south with consultation with existing and potential future utilities, private property owners affected, and any other considerations or factors that may be relevant.
Again, maintaining the 60-foot.
Yes, and that with the goal of maintaining the 60-foot right-of-way.
Do we have a second?
I'll second that.
Just a point of
this second, we've seconded, so we're in.
Well, I just had a question actually for Wayne, whether or not that means you have to re-advertise the hearings or whether it's better just to say schedule it for 60 or 90 days down the line.
Yeah, no, we would continue this hearing, actually. That's what I'm going to get to the point.
We'll continue this hearing and move it on.
And come back to a date and time certain. And
so
do
we have a motion in front of us. And all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. And that motion passes. Now,
the second motion is let's pick a date and time certain to come back for this particular proceeding. And we'll actually reopen the hearing at that point, too. Obviously, we're going to continue stuff and let folks comment on the new stuff.
Well, I think 60 days would be pretty tight time frame. I'd come back in 90 days at least, if not longer.
I don't disagree with that. Do you have a calendar?
We'll wait just a second. We'll get a calendar.
Daniel, we'll get a calendar and we'll go from there.
Yeah.
Sorry, I got mine. This calendar, but
I'm going to give you a bad time because when I walked in here, a lawyer told me it's going to be a short hearing. I forgot it was a lawyer.
I said the initial hearing on Olalla Acres would be a short hearing.
Yeah, there were three lawyers in the room.
Well, I was talking about this one. Yeah.
No, this is not going to be a short hearing.
And you can't blame me.
That's right. You didn't talk on the record.
So
April 5th.
Why don't we make it April 5th?
Hold on. I'm trying to think if I'm around that day.
I can't look on yours. Can we go through it?
We need to go back and look at the computer here.
No, okay. I'm gone the week of spring break, so I'll be back.
Okay. So,
motion to continue this hearing.
So I'll move to continue the public hearing on legalization of Southeast 23rd Street in Lincoln City until Wednesday, April 4th, 2017.
April 5th.
That the Board of Commissioners meeting will be held here at 9:30 a.m.
I'll second the motion.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Motion passes. So
okay.
That concludes that. Thank you. It's a complicated matter. We move down to decision and action item, amending the temporary regulations for the recreational marijuana facility adopted in Ordinance 484 and declaring an emergency.
Commissioners, if I might, this particular matter, as you may recall, you initiated some changes in the temporary regulations of recreational marijuana, and the Planning Commission held hearings on this particular matter and came back with three different recommendations. Two of those you unanimously as a board agreed to, and we adopted those as Ordinance Number 491 last week. However, the third one, there was a division of votes on the board. The Planning Commission had recommended maintaining the status quo of a 20-acre minimum in the AC zone in order to do outdoor grows. The consensus of two of the members of the board was to actually reduce that requirement to 10 acres. A motion was made to amend the ordinance to reduce that to 10 acres, and that motion passed by 2-1 with Commissioner Hunt voting no. The ordinance that I've got here reflects that decision and notes that Commissioner Hunt voted no on it. However, for procedural reasons, I'm asking that you actually, as a full board, adopt the ordinance that does reflect that record. And I need to ask first for Chair Thompson to just, is there any request that this ordinance be read in full? Hearing none from the commissioners, I'll ask that Chair Thompson read the ordinance by title only. And would you look to the open up your packet and actually read it from the materials there?
Let's see. I gotta get back here and find it. Okay, that'll work.
That'll work in the midst of all of this.
Okay. For the Board of Commissioners, Lincoln County, Ordinance 484, amending temporary regulations for recreational marijuana facilities adopted in Ordinance 484 and declaring an emergency. Is that what you want?
That's right. And this will be Ordinance Number 492 in our numbering system.
Okay.
So. And now we can have some discussion if you have any questions on this. Otherwise, we can entertain a motion.
Mr. Chair, I would move that we adopt Ordinance 492.
I'd second it.
Just for the record, where in the ordinance is my...
It's in a couple of locations. It's on page 2.
Page 2 is what I gave Chair Thompson.
It's probably it is. So if you'd like me, I'll read
it
for the record. Planning Commission recommendation number one was to maintain the minimum acreage 20 requirement.
Right. Okay. So this is merely proceeding with the execution of the ordinance
that
I post.
Okay. Right.
Yep. I'll second the motion. All those in favor?
Aye.
Okay. That motion passes.
Thank you, Commissioners.
Then we go down to reports.
Actually, you have one more order.
One more order.
On the top of page 3.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And if I might, Commissioners, let me just talk about that one briefly. This was a consent annexation of property into the Newport Rural Fire Protection District. You discussed that. The property owner desires to be placed into the district. The district desires to receive the property into the Newport Rural Fire Protection District. So We held the required public hearing on this on January 4th, and this is the order that will accomplish that annexation.
Mr. Chair, I'd move for adoption of this ordinance annexing certain property into the Newport Rural Fire Protection District at the request of the property owner.
I'll second it.
Okay. Then motion been made and seconded. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Motion passes. That was an easy one.
Yep. Sometimes they are.
Once in a while, we get lucky.
Now we move down to reports. Elected officials' reports.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
May I? Okay. First, I'd like to respond to Mr. Peltier's public comment earlier in the meeting, and I admire his passion for this issue and his obvious concern. Just for the record, I'd like to share a few things that I've been involved in or this board has been involved in through the years. I was chair of the committee that developed the local homeless plan. I was co-chair of the committee that developed the state homeless plan. Just some of the things that have come out of our local 10-year plan. Our Commission on Children and Families partnered with the school district and the McKinney-Vento homeless liaison program in the school district went from 2 half-time people, in other words, 1 FTE to 5 FTE, and those folks accomplish a tremendous amount of good working with homeless families. We have had 11 Project Homeless Connect events, 9 in Newport, 2 in Lincoln City. The 12th Project Homeless Connect will be later this month in Newport. We became the first rural county in Oregon to roll out 211 information and referral service for social services. I led a 3-year ad hoc effort that led to us getting 10 VASH vouchers to provide permanent housing vouchers for homeless veterans. We had no severe weather warming shelters 10 years ago. Now we've got 1 operating in Newport, 2 in Lincoln City. We obtained 18 units of apartments that are held by Community Services Consortium on our behalf as permanent supportive housing, in other words, long-term housing with no occupancy time limit for either families or individuals who have experienced chronic homelessness. The board last year okayed the purchase, and we will soon, hopefully in this coming year, have in place our 28 units of transitional housing, or not 28 units, but in our 2 units of transitional housing, have the ability to house up to 28 offenders re-entering the community. So, you know, is it enough? Obviously, if we're leading the state in per capita homeless students, it's not enough. That the problem is getting worse here, it's getting worse everywhere. I believe I just heard that Portland saw its 4th homeless person on the streets freeze to death in this severe winter. The only thing I would say to Mr. Peltier and to the public, we're doing the best we can with the resources we can, always willing to advocate for more resources, but this is a huge problem that didn't develop overnight, and unfortunately it's not going to be solved overnight. I was gone last week. I was with Mike MacArthur, the executive director of the Association of Oregon Counties. We spent all of last Wednesday on Capitol Hill. We were able to talk to 6 of 7 members of our congressional delegation. One of the interesting things, I think, for Oregon in the new political landscape is that Greg Walden, our 2nd district representative, is really in a powerful position in the new Congress, chairing the House Energy and Commerce Committee, which has a very broad jurisdiction. For instance, I wasn't aware until last week that health care falls under the jurisdiction of that committee. So the repeal and replacement of the Affordable Care Act will be under his jurisdiction. Also, our own 5th District Congressman, Kurt Schrader, he may be in a very interesting position in this House, even though the Republicans are in the majority. House Freedom Caucus, which is a more conservative caucus of House Republicans, is not in alignment with Speaker Paul Ryan on certain parts of his agenda. So we heard again and again that they're going to need some Democratic votes to move some of their legislation. And Representative Schrader was the leader of the Blue Dog Democratic Caucus, so he may be in a very helpful position to leverage on our things on our behalf. Our day on the Hill was followed by a day and a half of NACO programming, very interesting and informative, including hearing from the legislative director for Speaker Ryan. And then back here on Monday, not only did I chair the legislative committee meeting of AOC, but Commissioner Hunt, as chair of the governance committee, was there as well. And we had a busy Monday, already weighing in on several things of concern to counties, including adopting a resolution in opposition to the governor's budget proposal to zero out funding, state funding for wildlife services. So I could go on a lot longer, but I better stop there.
Okay. Yeah.
Well, I'll just cover a couple of items. And I think, Chair Thompson, you indicated this earlier during Mr. Peltier's comments, but certainly Bill takes the lead on housing issues. But, I mean, obviously there's a limitation to what each of us can do, and housing, I'm comfortable in saying for both of us, is certainly a priority to us also. And Bill has taken the lead on that. We each have areas where we devote the bulk of our time, but that does not mean that we're ignoring the issue and certainly looking for ways to address the issue and support Commissioner Hall in those efforts. So I think that's an important thing to note, that we're all concerned about that. Second of all, as Commissioner Hall already indicated, was in Salem on Monday. Ran the meeting as co-chair of the governance committee, and even though the bills that were dropped on Monday, we addressed 18 different bills in areas involving labor and employment, public contracting, taxation, and legislation process. So there were 18 items that we addressed on the very first day that the bills were, I guess, the legislative concepts were given bill numbers. So we're off to a start, but a lot to still happen. And finally, at the AOC conference in November, our county received an award for safety, and we received a gold award, and I believe this is our fourth or fifth year in a row of getting this award. The distinction is this year we were the only county of our size. The awards are grouped by smaller counties and larger counties, and we're considered a larger county. We were the only county in our group to get a gold award, and the injury frequency rate of 0.84 with 457 full-time employees, I think, speaks very well to the wellness programs and the other leadership that we're seeing within our directors and supervisors to address wellness and make sure that Lincoln County is a safe place to work. So wanted to present this award to the current chair, Thompson.
You know, that was, I was there at the hearing and I was going, well, Lincoln County can't win that award even though we've done a really good job. And then they stood up and made the presentation, and it was, I think we were all a little bit, wow, we did it.
And the only county in our size group to get a gold award.
Right. Yes. So
a few of the smaller ones did. Yes.
So some of the items that I was going to mention was I've been working on the Marine Debris Action Plan for a long time for the state of Oregon. It's a federal plan, and it's the rough drafts will be out pretty quick. So if you're interested in that topic, we're in there in a couple, three places that things that the counties did that we're fine on. But it's an important plan starting to address inland marine debris, more or less stuff that comes down the Columbia River and things like that that we've never really tried to address before. It's worth a short read. It's fairly easy to read, and what's expected of so many people. That's the more complicated part of the plan. the Wildlife Services issue. Bill, you were gone, mm-hmm. but I'm the one that called AOC and said, wait a minute, this is a big issue
right.
for the rural part of the state.
Yep.
And that's the county trapper and the legalizing of removal of species. And we run into all kinds of problems that people have no idea as a county. I mean, I was surprised that he was the one that was only person in the county that was authorized to remove bird nests from inside of covered bridges. There's so many things that go on in that that people have no idea that he does for us. He traps beavers out from underneath the culverts so our roads don't plug up and water runs over the top of it. And then to tell us they cut it out of the state budget, I was concerned and called AOC, and there I guess we're going to get together and try to solve this.
Can I ask you a question, Mr. Chair, yeah. related to this? Because, you know, 20 plus years ago when I first became aware of the trapper and the services, excuse me, I thought, you know, he was primarily serving the rural parts of our county, but didn't we learn a few years ago that actually he's taking more calls within city limits, responding to raccoons and other wild critters within city limits than he is in the rural parts of our county, or at least?
I forget the numbers, but it's staggering, like 1,000 yeah. animals right. from inside the city
yep.
report that he had worked on. Mm-hmm. And so these are services that I just don't, not sure why this got left out of the budget, because it's part of it. And one of the bad things is when you take it away, it doesn't come back. You can't come back and say, I want to redo it. It's one of the consequences, and it's handled under the Department of Agriculture. People think ODF&W handles these types of things, and they don't. It takes all kinds of special permits for him to work, and it's a very complicated and paperwork intensive job besides just handling the animals. And so he's an important part to us, and hopefully we'll be able to work this problem out. The third thing that I meant to mention, Wayne, have we had contact now on the ROPOS project and PMEC? Can we have a hearing date? Because I have a lot of people interested in what PMEC's doing, and I think they're going to be interested in this.
Yeah, the two things you're talking about are related to ocean observing and science. Obviously PMEC with the grant that they receive from the Federal Department of Energy is huge. And then the ROPOS
PMEC Pacific Marine right. Energy Center, that's the $40 million.
Right, that they receive from Department of Energy. And then the remote operated vehicles, ROPOS, I can't remember what ROPOS actually stands for. I'm not going to try and get it, but is a part of that whole research process over there. We were able at this point to get a tentative date on the representatives from ROPOS to come in. I'm still waiting to get PMEC to confirm that they can come in on that date, but that will be later this month, and we'll get some more advance notice on that.
Well, I'll explain what ROPOS is. I work with the big ROVs, and in order to get a remote operated vehicle that can go down the water and do underwater work at great depths, way beyond divers' abilities, you need an underwater vehicle. And right now, there's none in Oregon that are capable of this. I do a lot of this work related to undersea cables, and if we can find a ROPOS vehicle that's portable, where we move from vessel to vessel, it could bring a lot of jobs, and we have a lot of projects in the future going to be in Lincoln County. And if they can get a magnetometer, which goes on the front, that tells how deep the cable's buried, there's 15 or so undersea cables out here that we might be able to contract to, which would be another. So if it's in the Newport area or in the state of Oregon, it's job creation. And we're going to have a discussion on that, which I think might be interesting. And if we can time that with Pacific Marine Energy Center, and since they've got $40 million coming, it'd be a topic worthwhile discussing in front of us. And I don't think it's been discussed anywhere in the public yet, these two projects. That's
we're working on a date.
Okay, working on a date. I thought we found a date. Okay. With anything else that we need to cover? We have a executive session, pursuit to litigation. Do you need that?
Yes, just a very brief one, but why don't you recess for a few minutes?
Okay. Have a call for constituent input.
Oh, excuse me, constituent input. I know everybody here. I don't think
okay. We still have to.
Yeah.
For the record.
No constituent input, and Then we're going to recess to executive session pursuant to ORS 192.660(2)(8) to discuss litigation matters.